Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name is Robert and with me here is Matthew.
Bonsoir, although it's not the evening and that would be good evening in French, but we'll continue.
Very good. Your multilingual speaking skills are coming along.
That's me.
We are the podcast, of course, that looks at making great audio drama. You can get us on our website, which is audiodramaproduction.com, and we're often hanging out in our spiritual home on the Facebook group. So, this week, we're looking at audio drama on Spotify, changing DAWs, and a little bit more on audio storytelling. Mr. Matthew.
Well, big news in the can we call it the podosphere? I suppose we could. And who's going to correct us? there was a special episode of The Feed, which is the official Libsyn podcast. Libsyn, of course, are a podcast host themselves. I think they are the biggest podcast host. We host with them on this show. So they put out an episode on Monday, and seemingly they've been sitting on this information for a wee while. There was an embargo. But Spotify, which is I think it's the biggest music streaming service in the world. I'm prepared to be corrected on that, but as far as I know, you know, there's 70 million users on Spotify.
Wow.
Which is no small number. And up until now, Spotify's been exclusively a music-based service, so yeah. You could just go on there and stream albums. But the big news is that Spotify are partnering with a lot of people now, and they're going to be bringing podcasts onto the interface, if you like, onto their program.
Yeah.
And this is huge news, because previously, aside from iTunes, all the other podcast directories and things like that, things like Stitcher, you know, outside the podcast, not a lot of people have heard of these things.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, so many people I know have Spotify. Are you on Spotify yourself?
I do have an account. I haven't used it in a little while, but I'm certainly familiar with them.
So the big news is that with podcasts coming on to Spotify, this is going to throw open the doors to all sorts of people finding your work. Obviously, for this podcast, you know, we're audio dramatists, so you can get your audio drama on there. I think the way it's going, and there's no point in repeating everything that's on the feed, we'll put that in the show notes, because all the details is in there. There's no point in repeating everything on that podcast, but it's kind of, they're sort of trialing it now, they're trying out some episodes, and I think by the end of the summer, that's when they're going to open the doors to all the podcasts.
Right, wow.
One of the big questions, I suppose, that the listener might have is, what if I'm not hosting with Libsyn? Because it's not going to be, as far as I know, it's not going to be like a traditional directory where you just submit your RSS feed. I think they will pull everything from your RSS feed. But I think the way to get on there is that you have to be hosting with one of their partners.
Yeah.
At the moment, as far as I'm aware, the only partner that's a podcast host is Libsyn. But I would imagine that other podcast hosts will want to get in on this. They'd be foolish not to. So
they'll fall in line.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, they'd be stupid not to. So I'd imagine if you host with Blueberry or Podbean or anyone else like that, Jellycast, that, you know, surely there will be a way, maybe not quite this year or maybe towards the end of the year, but I'd imagine there'll be a way to get in there.
So the big question is this the Netflix for audio drama that we've been waiting for?
Well, this is another question. You know how we've always really suffered from the categories problem in likes of iTunes, like art and entertainment, you know, these really bland descriptions of content that just mean nothing for us.
Yeah, we're not audiobooks either, damn it.
Yeah, so I really can't see, at least in the short term, that, you know, there being anything like that, especially for audio drama, because we're a niche of a niche at the moment. I don't think we're big enough for Spotify to notice us at the moment. I mean, that could change.
We're like the self-help section in the bookstore, aren't we?
Yeah.
At the back, sort of like above the kiddies' books.
And I suppose, like, the big thing for podcasting in general, for talk podcasting, is that people will now be able to go on Spotify and search for content that interests them.
Yeah.
It comes down to how searchable audio drama will be on there. And I wonder if, you know, in the future we should be, like, say, to give an example ourselves, when we created Aftermath, back in the day, in all the data and the interface on the host, I don't think we really mentioned audio drama in the title. It was just called Aftermath.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it would be better now for people to go into their hosting and in the title of their show, I mean, we're going to do Valen High, our own show, so it would be prudent for us probably to have the full title as Valen High, a fantasy audio drama anthology series. So that when people go into Spotify and other directories and type in audio drama, that's going to come up. Because if people aren't specifically looking for your show, they probably won't find it because they won't know it's an audio drama.
Well, that's why we changed it from the Yap Audio podcast, which was about stuff in general, to very specifically, and this was on the back of your research, the Audio Drama Production Podcast. This is exactly what it is. It's what it does. It's what you're looking for, and you've got it, and you've found it in one very quick search. So obviously that's the way to go, isn't it?
Yeah, they do say treat iTunes and Spotify will be the same. Treat them as search engines. So
yeah,
try and get those details in there that people can find you. So, I mean, we talk about We're Alive and that a lot. They're very popular. So when their listeners find out that podcasts are on Spotify, they'll maybe be searching Spotify. They'll type in audio drama, and you want your show to be listed there. You want your show to be found.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get categories, but try and get audio drama into your title. Have your title of your show, but tell people it's an audio drama and let them find you.
And that really does work, because I looked for a sci-fi podcast just to see what was out there last night, and it came up the sci-fi movie podcast or something, and I listened to it and I really enjoyed it, and it was exactly the same kind of thinking that we're employing, so it really does work. Can't stress that enough.
One of the big pieces of news in this podcast, Rob Walsh, he's the head honcho there at Libsyn, and it's his belief that by the end of this year, this will clearly, Spotify will clearly be the number two place where people consume podcasts behind iTunes. And that's massive, because iTunes is just getting more and more powerful with the podcast, because they actually are interested in podcasts. Places like Google, Android and that are not. It's very difficult to consume podcasts, but iTunes are obviously, you know, I think they kind of came up with podcasts, didn't they?
And when we were at the podcast convention in Birmingham last year, it became apparent, didn't it, that iTunes had, I'm going to use very rough figures, something like 70% of the podcast market, and you had places like Stitcher, Spreaker, which I hadn't even heard of.
Yeah.
The other one, TuneIn Radio, you get stuff on there. And they were getting the scraps. So there's obviously a huge market there for Spotify to take from iTunes. Obviously, it's going to still be number two, but 70%, that's massive. So that's a really good assault on their potential listeners.
Yeah, and I mean, 70 million people, that's not to be sneezed at. You know, you put Spotify on in the house all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All these people that are just listening to Spotify, they're immediately going to have access to your content in something that they're going into on a daily basis, whether that's at home on their computer or on their phone.
Yeah.
So get yourself found and take the opportunity to get in there. If you're with Libsyn, then that'll be a faster process, because I think eventually everyone's going to have the option to get in there. I think all you have to do is get on when this sort of takes place in the summer and just agree to the terms and conditions to be listed there. I think that's all you have to do.
Yeah.
If you're not with Libsyn, just keep an eye on what your own host's saying. I think all hosts are fairly good at communicating with their customers. I'd hope so anyway.
Yeah.
So even get in touch with them if they're not saying anything and say, look, this is a pretty important development in podcasts and this is taking place and where do we stand? If you can't get any information out of them, maybe it's something to consider switching host. Maybe that's something to look at further down the line, but certainly find out first before you make any big decisions.
Yeah, and we're advocates of Libsyn because it works for us, because of the nature, the frequency even of the podcast that we're putting out. Maybe it won't work for you in the short term if you're putting out one podcast a year, but with what we've discussed today, it's looking more like Libsyn and associated partners are the way to go. And the success of audio dramas, it comes down to, will there be interest in them? Will there be enough reason for these companies to put them up? And it will come down to whether or not there's content good enough in the first place for people to want more of and demand, and that will push it. So come on, folks, let's get that great content out there, and we'll see this niche of a niche, as you put it, take off within the next 24 months in a big way. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yep, great stuff there. So I think that pretty much wraps that up. Mm-hmm. Elsewhere on the show today, DAWs, digital audio workstations, the things that we basically sit down and edit our audio dramas on.
What's wrong with editing software? Why did it need its own acronym?
It's a funny thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
They call it that. It really is. Like, when I heard it a few years ago, I was like, what's a DAW?
Yeah.
But that's what they're called for some reason. You would think editing software would be, but I suppose that's a bit generic.
You're like a music player, your digital audio something, I don't know.
We ourselves, Robert, we learned back in the day on Adobe Audition. Did we start on 1.5 and I think we moved to 3.0?
Our college had 1.5. We managed to get 3.0, which was more or less top of the range. Said college is now on 6.0, which I think is similar to the CC one, Creative Cloud.
Yeah, that's the one that I've just bought.
Yeah.
So DAWs, this is something I've wanted to talk about for a while, because I was really worried about changing my primary DAW, because you get very, very competent, don't you? You work with the same thing all the time, you know where everything is,
yeah.
You become very comfortable with it.
Shortcuts, everything.
And yeah, exactly, you know, you barely touch the mouse, you get so good at it, and it becomes almost, you know, it's a monkey on the back to think that maybe I'll have to upgrade this at some point. Especially with everything moving into the cloud now. Like, previously you would get these versions coming out every year, and they would just cost this massive lump fee. And I think it's a wise move of these companies now to go to the subscription model, because whilst, you know, it's very difficult to fork out a few hundred pounds, isn't it? But when you can just pay like £15 a month for something that you really do need, then you're a lot more likely to move to that model, aren't you? And then you don't always, you know, your version's never going to become obsolete.
Do they send you updates via the cloud on a regular basis then? A bit like computer games nowadays, when you turn your game on and you're hooked to the internet and it says, oh, it needs an update, hold fire.
Yeah, pretty much. And before I bought it, I mean, the reason I've taken this sort of move, I've got a very old laptop and I've got a MacBook, but it's my old laptop that has Adobe 3.0 on it. And I've always had this fear that, you know, if that breaks, and I've got Pro Tools on my Mac, which I could use, but I'm not entirely comfortable with.
You hate it.
Yeah, I hate it. And, you know, I could use it, but I'd much rather use Adobe Audition just because I'm used to it.
Yeah.
And I've always had this fear that, is it wise just to run this old laptop into the ground and one day it breaks, and then I really have to jump into the frying pan and learn something else? Even a newer version, which could be totally different. And I'm a student, as you might know if you listen to the podcast on a regular basis. So my student card runs out in the summer, and they do a deal on Adobe that if you're a student, you could get everything they do, Photoshop and everything, which I won't use, for £15 odds a month. That's for a year. I would have to downgrade after that, or it's going to cost me a fortune. But my wife, Julia, she does photography. So I'd said to her, look, you get Photoshop with this as well. And she was looking at the prices with me, and I was saying, so it's £15 a month, £15 odds, and after that it's X amount. And she says, so when's it paid up? And I was like, well, it's a cloud-based thing. And she's like, yeah, but when do you own it? And I'm like, well, you don't really own it. It's a service.
I rent it.
You know, it's she's just used to that older model. You buy something, you own it. And
yeah.
I think we're moving away from that now on the internet. Well, a lot of, you know, it's more going to be service-based and purchase-based. Is that a fair comment?
I was going to say this earlier on, especially with Spotify. You know, you're paying money every month, and you don't ever own copies of the music, I don't think.
It's getting to the stage where, do you need to own copies of the music anymore?
Well, that's right. I tried saying this to my father-in-law. I said, but what happens when you kind of get that song anymore and it's not available anymore because blah, 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 like old stuff that he likes from, you know, before TV was invented. And it's like, well, It'll be there. I've got faith in the internet. The internet is my god.
Yeah, if the internet dies now, I mean, I don't think we'll be alive. So it would take a lot for that.
Or would we wish to be?
Yeah. So I've completely forgot where I was. Oh, yeah. So paying the subscription for Adobe Audition.
Yeah.
Got it, downloaded it, and, you know, I've edited the last few podcasts on it, and I do some work part-time producing podcasts for a small company as well. So I've found it really good, and I'm interested in the listener's perspective, because my advice to people would always be, don't change your DAW, you know, and by that I don't mean don't upgrade them, but don't jump from one to the other, don't go Cubase to Pro Tools and then Adobe. I'd much rather see people mastering one of them and getting really competent on it than just being all right at, you know, a variety of them.
Yeah.
Because they all work on the same principle.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any real benefit to just being all right on all of them. I think
you need to specialise in one for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think if you're putting yourself out there for jobs as well in this field, it is good to be able to say that you've used lots of different systems, because it just looks good. They're not going to ask you to be able to use six, but if you can say, oh, I've used Sadie 6, which is a BBC style one, Audacity, Adobe, Pro Tools, then they'll say, oh, wow, that's great, you can use loads. Well, come here and use one.
Yeah.
And then as long as you can say, well, I'm a specialist in one, so... Yeah,
that's another interesting point as well, because in the world of film, certainly Pro Tools, you know, I think this is a fair comment, that is industry standard in film, and if you want to work in sound in film, I really think Pro Tools is the best route to go down. If you want to work in radio, I would probably imagine Adobe Audition as the... Is that pretty much industry standard? You're a radio worker, Robert.
Yeah, I have worked in three radio stations in the local-ish area, and they all use Adobe Audition. I mean, they've all got specific news-style editing software, but they also have Adobe Audition for importing stuff like interviews that's been done in the field and then cut up with that, and everybody uses Adobe. Yeah, Adobe is the king in the radio world for sure. And it's funny when you said film there, as somebody who claims not to watch films... it sounded like an alien world. An alien word coming out of your mouth. You said, in the world of film?
Film, that dirty word.
Yeah, if you're one of them. So, but yeah, to answer your question again, Adobe number one.
Yeah, I mean, we like Adobe. The listener might have a different preference. I think we've all, pretty much all of us out there, have used Audacity. Audacity, totally fine for recording it, eh? You know,
yeah,
really nice, and
it's a scaled back version of Adobe, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say if you're just doing a speech podcast, then Audacity is totally fine. But if you're looking to add that wee bit of detail, you're really looking for something with a bit more kick about it, a bit more options, a bit more flexibility. But you know, Audacity has its place.
Absolutely, Julie Hoverson, 19nocturneboulevard.net. She to this day says that she mixes everything in Audacity, and she's very happy with her sound. So, as you say, it comes down to being skilled enough with one DAW.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, there'll be some people out there that use Audacity and make better stuff than us. So who are we to say, you know, don't use it? If you're getting by with Audacity, then by all means, stick with it.
Yeah.
Because it works for you, and that's what's important.
I mean, there's probably a lot of stuff to Audacity that we don't even know, because we've never persevered with it long enough and we've stuck with our favourite.
Yeah, so... In summary, I mean, I've really taken to the new Adobe Audition, and it's a relief, because I'm using a fairly modern MacBook that I know, touch wood, should be okay in the next few years. It runs so much faster than that old laptop, and I think they've made some improvements that are very noticeable to me. I won't go into those, it's a bit technical, and it's probably better to do that sort of thing with visuals, you know, an internet tutorial, a YouTube tutorial. But,
with a big long-winded speech at the beginning.
Yeah, a big intro. So, you know...
Hey, guys.
An intro to why you might produce audio for half an hour. And you're like, no, just tell me how to do this, please.
I've been through this in my own head. That's why I'm here. No, don't show us the cat. That does happen.
So, yeah, get in touch. Podcast at audiodramaproduction.com. Tell us what it is you use. to record and mix? Why do you use it? And have you always mixed it? And have you ever changed from one to the other and stuck with something new? And why did you do that? I'd be really interested to hear from everyone on that.
I'm laughing to myself here because one of our favourite producers said recently, thank you to everyone for establishing the rules. I love breaking them. And I thought, yeah, he does break them. And then I've just thought about which one he uses, which DAW. I think it's called Gold Wave or
something.
That's
right, yeah.
And I don't even know that one. I've never heard of it, but he sticks to it. Just funny, just everybody has their preference.
Yeah, I remember we did that article for Colin Gray, the podcast host, about producing Aftermath. There was a couple of screenshots of our multi-track. And we got a bit of stick off a couple of people because we didn't name our tracks. we don't do it properly, apparently. But I've always said that. I don't think there might be a proper way in terms of how the people that made the software envisaged the best process. But
yeah,
again, you know, if stuff works for you, if you do something a certain way and it works, then never let anyone tell you you're doing it wrong. It's the only result that matters is the end result.
That's right.
And I think, you know, you're talking about Jack Kincaid there. I think we had a discussion about this, and I said, look, if you edit your show on a unicycle juggling cucumbers with a bucket of worms on your head and your show sounds good, then I don't care how you got there.
Yeah.
I only care about the end product. So,
and I guess if you've got 500 tracks in your multi-track and say there's like 20 different people in your office, and everybody, you know, one person will go in and they'll make notes and come out, then somebody else will take up that person's notes and then go in. All right, you're better to have it all laid out clearly for the next person.
Yeah, definitely.
But for me and you, we know what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
We don't need to label our tracks. So
yeah, if you're working in film or games and a team of sound designers and, like you say, you've got a multi-track, then yeah, totally, that's what the naming system's there for. But
yeah, and if we're not sure, we ask each other.
Yeah.
Through the media of communication. So it's fine. It's fine. We'll stick to the way we do it. What's up next?
The Knights of the Pledge on Patreon, patreon.com.
Yeah.
We had four knights. Patreon's it's a website that enables people to support their favourite podcasts and artists and audio dramas. Four contributors so far, Karim, Umberto, Kesey and Bob. But we have a fifth Knight of the Pledge, don't we?
We do indeed. Christian of the Once and Future Nerd. Thank you very much, Christian.
Yeah, thanks, Christian. That's really appreciated. Christian's show, The Once and Future Nerd, a show that I've actually been listening to this week, and I really, really like it. It's such a great story with such a huge amount of detail in it.
Yeah.
I know that listener Kesey, who does her art, has been raving about it for ages, and I'd been looking forward to listening to it ever since Christian came on the show. So I've put, and this is another thing I wanted to ask the listener about, how do you consume audio drama? Because what I've been doing, I've went back to work this week, I've got a lot of time to listen to stuff, and I had this huge list of shows that I wanted to get through.
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, listening to all of the Once and Future Nerd, and then all of Alba Salix Royal Physician, and then all of the Hadron Gospel Hour, what I've done is just mixed them all up. So I don't really know what's coming next. I'll get an episode of one, I'll get an episode of the other. Because what I found is if you spend too much time with one audio drama, you get so into it that when you start a new one, you don't really give it a fair chance for a couple episodes, and it takes a bit longer. So what I'm doing now is I'm gradually introducing shows. Yesterday I stuck in Hidden Harbour Mysteries, I stuck in The Table Round. I'm just bringing in all these new shows, and The Once and Future Nerd, really, really good. Big thanks to Christian. I'd like to get him back on the show at some point. They've been nominated for a Parsec Award as well.
Yeah, I saw that.
And some of these other shows as well I need to mention, because Alba Salix, that was Eli McElveen who's been on the show.
Yeah.
That is just brilliant. I love it. Love The Once and Future Nerd as well, but love this. And another one I have to give a heads up to now. The other two I mentioned I've just started, so we'll get to them over the next few weeks. But the Hadron Gospel Hour, that's just like nothing I've ever heard before. It's just mental.
Really?
But brilliant. I can't get enough of it. So it's great to be getting back to listening to new audio drama and finding these shows. It's shows I've wanted to listen to for a long time, but I'm really enthusiastic about it. And, you know, there's so much talent out there. It's exciting.
These are all shows that I've not had a chance to listen to yet. You may or may not know that my listening time is extremely limited at the moment. It has been for a little while because I've got my little one during the day. And then I work 5 till 10 and I'm not allowed to have headphones in. So, you know, and I can't put headphones in while the wee one's running around because if I take my eyes and ears off her, that's it. The house is dust. So, at night, that's my chance at the moment. However, now that the nicer weather's coming in, and incidentally, we are sitting in the car again, in the car park. No grass cutter this week.
Touch wood. Well, there's time.
Yeah. So it looks like I'll be able to start walking to and from work without fear of being utterly drenched, soaked, and otherwise pulverized by the weather. So I'm really looking forward to getting these shows downloaded and listened to. In fact, my computer's on at home right now, and I've actually put a couple of these shows, they're being transferred over to my
device.
It comes up as a Walkman on the computer. It's an MP3 player, Walkman. So I'm going to be jogging a bit more as well. So I will be listening to these shows very soon. You have my word.
Yeah, I'm a bit fortunate because I go back to work in the summer. I'm a golf course greenkeeper by trade. I sit on a moor all day if I'm lucky, or I'm always doing something that I just stick the earbuds in. So yeah. It's great to have all this entertainment. And that's how I got into audio drama in the first place, doing that job. And I think we all have our own listening habits. We all have our own ways in which we enjoy consuming audio drama. And that definitely is mine. It's that need to be doing something that doesn't really involve my brain, you know, like cutting a fairway or a green. You know, I've done it a million times.
Yeah.
I'm in autopilot.
Muscle memory takes over.
Yeah. So you're just working away. And that really, I can't sit in the house and just listen to audio drama.
No.
I can't play the Xbox and listen to it. I can't read and listen to it. I can't. There's lots of things I just wouldn't take it in, but that is my favourite sort of way of consuming it. So great to have this huge playlist that seems to keep growing every single week.
Yeah, I mean, we complained for long enough that there wasn't much good out there. And now these really excellent shows are starting to really come to the fore. So,
and again, it goes back to what we said earlier. It's just not easy to find stuff.
Yeah.
Shows like the Sonic Society and Radio Drama Revival, they do a great job at bringing shows to your attention, but again, you know, you have to be in your comfort zone for listening and consuming to give these shows a listen. But you know, that's another two shows that are on the playlist as well.
Yeah.
Shall we move on then? We've got a message from Domine of Audio Epics.
Hey guys, excited to hear you're going to do a fantasy anthology series. I have felt for a while there is not enough fantasy in the audio drama landscape. If you can use my help in some way, I'd be happy to offer it. All the best, Domine.
Thanks, Domine. That's a great offer coming from Domine, because he is, you know, he's the fantasy guy in audio drama, isn't he?
Absolutely.
I think we called him the Tolkien of audio drama before.
Yeah.
I stand by that. I love Domine's stuff. So, Domine, yeah, we'd be delighted for you to get involved. If you ever fancied writing or producing an episode for us, then please get in touch again and we'll do something.
Yeah, that'd be really good.
And that stands for everyone, by the way. You know, if you want to get involved in Valenhai, just say the word. We're always going to be looking for new ideas, new writers, anything like that. So get involved.
Yeah, that's interesting, because we've got a lot of people offering their voice talents, which I'm sure we'll be delving into fairly soon. More on that shortly. But yeah, we would like to invite story ideas, even potentially full scripts for us to collaborate with, or just simply work on them, or whatever. All credits will be reserved for whoever needs them, like the writing done by so-and-so. So yeah, get in touch. Discuss it with us.
Here's another person who got in touch, Neil at Twilight Audio Theatre. He said he just found the podcast, this was a couple of weeks ago now, and he'd been listening to all the back episodes. He gave us a great iTunes review, and then he mentioned the show on his own podcast, The Geeking. Here's something for you. Neil mentioned this on the podcast.
Yeah.
I had a very small voice role in one of his productions. It was called We All Scream. This was right back when I bought my Zoom recorder and I was listening to audio drama.
2011.
It would have been about then, yeah.
Wow.
And I was, because I think we were doing the casting call for Aftermath, and I was on that forum on Audio Drama Talk, and I just auditioned. You know, I always say now I'm not interested in voice acting, but this was just, I was taking my baby steps into the medium.
Yeah, we went through a spell of submitting auditions to lots of different places just to get our
just to
wet.
See how it was done.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a very, I think it might have just been one line. but, you know, I was in there and Neil mentioned that. He mentioned that he'd recognised my voice. So have a look for that online. If I could find it, I'll put it in the show notes. But Neil's a really, really nice guy. And he's actually kickstarting a new show, ANKH. I thought that might have been abbreviated.
A new kind of hope. It's,
I was looking for the full title. I think that might be the title. I should have really asked Neil. I was speaking to him yesterday about this because I chucked some money his way, a modest amount. He's looking for $650, and that says a lot about Neil being a nice guy because he wants to use that to pay. He's not just saying, I want some money.
Yeah.
He wants to pay.
Not like us, right?
Yeah, we just want your money. He wants to pay his actors. He wants to pay the people who are working on the project.
The talent.
So let's try and help Neil out. I hope I'm not speaking out of line here, but I've got Neil on Facebook just when meeting up was, you know, in the virtual world recently, and I noticed that his wee dog, Scooby, unfortunately passed away yesterday, of recording Saturday. So, you know, he's going to be a bit down, isn't he? So why don't we, as the audio drama community, get behind him and try and kickstart this project for him and give him a nice wee lift? We're a small community. We should look out for each other. So
yeah,
it'd be great if we could help Neil get this show funded.
Good idea.
So we'll put the links to that in the show notes, and let's get Neil up and running with this thing because I'm sure it will be brilliant.
I'm looking forward to seeing the results from this.
So, are we through the things we had to get through before handing back over to Mr. Jack Ward?
Yes, it's time for part two of What Makes an Audio Story.
Yeah, so in part one, Jack took us through basically the definitions of certain types of audio stories. He's came up with this essay and it's really interesting. He had some great clips. And I think he's just trying to define certain things and, you know, put things in boxes, if you like.
And yeah, like the extreme forms of storytelling and the blurred lines between, I guess.
Yeah, and just where everyone might fit into that. So yeah, let's hand it back over to Jack then.
Let's hear it.
My Unified Theory of the Audio Story, Part 2. How is an audio story represented? Is there a way to best articulate all the kinds of stories you can have in audio? I'm Jack Ward from the Sonic Society. Last time I postulated that there are three corners of the audio story triangle. Audio drama based on scripted plays, audio narrative based on prose or novel form, and experimental audio that takes all kinds of forms, not the least of which are sketches and improvisational audio. We identified that every audio drama production company, writers, and producers have neighborhoods or plotted areas that we can triangulate, as it were, and just being able to visualize that brings us to a deeper understanding of the character of a group of stories or a company, and the style of the writer or writers involved. But as much as I love this model, it's not complete. Although it covers all the various sources of audio stories, it's kind of flat because it doesn't look at how a story is executed. So I'm standing right here in the very center of our massive audio triangle, exactly between drama, narrative, and experimental, to bring some depth to the story. So our middle portion is growing, higher and higher until it reaches its own peak. Our audio triangle has become an audio pyramid because this third dimensional place, this extra fourth part, I like to label intimate. Now, I understand that labels are problematic, and once we rise above everything, we're in a precarious position of falling. I'm not trying to say that one kind of audio story connects with people and another does not. What I'm saying is, the higher you are in intimacy with the listener, the less you need to build an audio world around them, and the more you require the listener to construct the landscape in their own heads. Now, I know that I depicted the endpoint of narrative last time as being that lone voice with no sound effects or music, but that was really to try to help you better picture the differences between script and prose, drama and narrative. There really doesn't need to be sound effects or music in drama either. When I was a kid, there was a show on television called Story Theater, in which actors like Alan Alda got together in no costumes, with no props, and no sound effects, and acted out fairy tales. This was one of the most intimate portraits of story, because watching, you had to imagine, without prompting, the actors riding horses, the trolls, and the bridges they lived under. So much is created by the viewer or the listener that there's almost a direct line from the writer through the voice of the actor to the audience. There's nearly no intermediary in the way. It is, for lack of a better word, intimate. One of the key elements of the audio story is that it is the most intimate of mediums. The cinema and television and even a stage play you witness from a distance, and it takes incredible art to bridge that gulf between performance and audience, to erase that distance and be immersed in the experience. But audio is best experienced intimately, by which I mean that the images are drawn straight from your imagination. The sounds strike up the story inside your head, and the listener is, in a real way, a co-creator, filling in the elements of the set, sound effects, and atmosphere with color, texture, and lighting. Even the characters, although hinted at by their voices and the description in the story, emerge entirely from the listener's mind. That is why closure is so effective in art, because it allows the experiencer to complete the message. In my play One by One, sound effects and dialogue describes the beginning of a great plague that'll wipe out all of Halifax.
Line 3.
Hello, Eva.
Hello.
This is Dan from Classic Bubbly.
Are you on the air?
Yes, you're on the air right now. You're calling from downtown?
Yes, I'm here on Market Street. I just left the wooden monkey with my boyfriend. Hey, Brian, where are you going?
Eva, what's going on?
Well, we're being kept back right now. We were told originally not to leave the restaurant, but many people, they didn't want to stick around and they didn't see any reason. They
told you not to leave the restaurant? Who told you that, Eva?
Police, I guess. I mean, they identified themselves as police, but I didn't see a badge. They just walked in, but weren't wearing any uniforms. Just black trench coats and suits. They flashed their wallets.
What exactly did they say?
Brian, where are you going?
Eva, can you hear me?
Dan, I have to go. My boyfriend, he's run off. I have to go find him.
Eva, stay on the line, please. Eva!
No, you can't get through there!
Eva! Eva! It looks like we've lost Eva, folks. Katie and I will try to get her back. In the meantime, back to the hands and old-time radio Halloween.
It's the acting of Tanya Maleyevich that sells the growing fear of the crowd. As her character keeps calling out for her boyfriend and then running away down the street, it just provides enough of the scene for the listener to understand and complete the picture. The more intimate the portrayal of the story, the fewer clues the story provides. Take, for example, this clip from the now legendary, did we just dream this series or what? Midnight Radio Theater by Billy Sinise.
I think we're going to live happily ever after.
Do you think we're going to be punished?
What, by God?
Yeah, God, or whatever.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, what we did is what millions of people all over the world do every day. Are all of them going to be punished?
Maybe they already are. Maybe it's like happening in small ways, like having more bad days than most, or just more general bad luck. It could be big stuff too. It could happen so far from the incident that you wouldn't even know it, like cancer when you're 50 for something you did when you were in your early 30s.
I mean, no one thinks to blame cancer on moral choices we make, but what if that person really had it coming? What if she was a cheater like us? Someone who was responsible for breaking up a family.
She thought at the time that she got away with it. 20 years later, she's punished.
I was in an unhappy marriage. You were in an unhappy relationship as well. I mean, now we have a better chance at this than we ever did before. This is a good thing.
My situation was different. You two made a commitment. You know, you had a child together. Didn't you have a responsibility to at least make an effort to get past it?
What makes you think we didn't?
Well, you could have at least separated before sleeping with me.
That's what really broke her heart open.
Jesus Christ, woman. Is this part of the punishment?
Did you feel the simple nature of that scene? It's intimate. There's not a lot provided or needed to paint a rich picture of the characters, their relationship, and the world that surrounds them. It is in the execution of this scene that brings closure from the minds of the listener. Here's another quick example. Biological Clock from Ira Gamerman from the Truth Podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Look at that. He must have helped hundreds of couples.
It needs another space right in the center for another Polaroid for the baby that is going to come out of you.
Oh. One second.
Turn that off.
I can't. It's Putin.
Oh.
I swear to God, I think he's flirting with me on these texts.
Oh, gosh, I hope so.
I just need to get back to him right now.
I am this close to organizing a concert to support the Chechen rebels at this point. This guy texts you way too much.
Well, that's why you would support them.
I support all rebels.
We should compile these stories for our future child.
Yes. Daddy, tell me another story. Because he's going to be an 1800s British child. Tell me another story,
Mommy.
Tell me about when Vladimir Putin trying to pick you up.
Are we putting eggs in baskets?
Are some eggs in a basket, I will fertilize them.
Oh.
Hi, you too.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sorry to keep you both waiting.
Well, that's totally fine.
That happens.
I have bad news.
While both of these clips are happening in a kind of modern-day setting, they don't have to be. However, it could be fair to say that the more removed you are from the present setting, the more apt your producer and audio engineer will need to provide clues to better paint the soundscape for the listener. It would be too simple to suggest that our peak of the audio story pyramid intimate requires little or no sound effects to achieve. I don't think the answer is that you just eliminate your sound effects to create intimacy in your audio story. But there is a sense of purity that comes with shaving off everything that's not needed to tell the story and keep the narrative as clean and clear as possible. Intimate. This style was found in a lot of old-time radio shows because sound effects were live and, unless run by a team of people, were executed by a single special effects artist. This was the guy, or gal, who needed to get rid of the high-heeled shoes in time to break open the door before rendering a thunderstrike in the air. Starkly produced and executed, audio drama demands a lot of their listeners. But it also provides, in a strange way, a very rich soundscape, because it lets the listener create it themselves. But what if your goal is to create a rich and textured soundscape for your listeners? That sound you're hearing below us is our pyramid morphing one last time. We may have one point going up where we're standing now, But down below, the base of the pyramid is jutting outwards into its final point. This transforms our pyramid structure into an octahedron, or for the nerdy among us, an eight-sided die. On all eight facets, we connect the three points in the middle of drama, narrative, and experimental with the final north and south points of the audio story being intimate and dynamic. What is dynamic in our now fully three-dimensional audio world? Dynamically executed audio stories represent the cinematic and are often described, unfairly I think, as the modern-day audio drama sensibility. Dynamic audio stories can include multi-layered sound effects representing what I call the Every Blade of Grass group. Dynamic audio stories cue in the listener by giving much more texture to scenes. Listeners don't need to work as hard to get into the story. You don't have to imagine the sound of the speeding freight car or the steam-powered lightning gun. The dynamic story has it produced for you. Similarly, when a story is executed dynamically, expect to have characters' positions in the audio to be defined and deliberate. Dynamic audio is especially concerned with perspective and using music to set mood and tone. When Dirk Maggs tells you that he wants audio drama to be cinematic, just like the movies, you can be certain it's not an accident that his productions are robustly dynamic. Some other dynamic groups include Epic Audio, Oral Stage Studios, Final Rune Productions, Darker Projects, Wayland Productions, and of course, again, in Broken Sea Audio when either Stevie Farnaby or Bill Hallwig get behind the wheel. Like this scene from Escape from New York.
Bullshit walkie-talkie. Need to get a new one. Like we ever get new equipment around here. Base control, this is Gotham 4, North Bay, Station 17. I have an escape in progress. An object in mid-bay moving towards the wall.
Copy that, Gotham
4. Eagle 2, did you copy that? Over.
I copy base control 1. Over.
Intercept and neutralize. Over.
Intercept and neutralize. I copy base control 1. Eagle 2, out.
Copy that, Eagle 2. Good hunting. Out.
Dynamic audio stories can instantly transport listeners to new worlds with 3D holographic sound structures and a deep understanding of how to use a lot of sound in ways that avoids becoming a cloud of noise, but instead a rich environment. You might think of it this way. An intimate execution of an audio story is like a book. A dynamic execution of an audio story is a film experience in sound. Again, it's no accident that dynamic producers often describe their radio drama as audio movies. So now, you can consider where in this diamond-shaped octahedron of audio your favorite stories lie. Do dynamic and intimate executions of audio stories say something of the writers and production companies who use them? Absolutely. With someone who grew up with the Spartan use of sound effects and perspective in old-time radio, or with a deep appreciation for community theater, have a difficulty appreciating dynamic more than intimate audio? Similarly, would someone who considers themselves a visual learner and a lover of movies find the intimate portrayal of an audio drama bland and uninteresting? In the 10 years of the Sonic Society, there's been nearly 150 contributors of audio shows, and most of those in the last five. Can you imagine where they would all fit on those eight sides? Where would you place Campfire Theater? Or Dick Dynamo? Certainly many audio production companies have multiple places on the map, but wouldn't that information also find them located a little closer towards the region of experimental? Icebox Radio, for example, depending upon whether they're presenting a live or studio production, or a holiday, or a series show, they could certainly have different places on our octahedron. And knowing Jeffrey Adams, that's just how he likes it. Same with companies such as Misfits, Pendant, and Gypsy, who are all cooperative groups with varying genres and concepts. Still others like Harry Strange, Desert Gems, The Once and Future Nerd, Wormwood, Bells in the Bat Free, Kung Fu Action Theater, and Dr. Floyd, through genre or single series, would have clear positions on our eight-sided world. And that's it. All the points of the audio story compass. All aspects of story representation and execution form together. The only question that remains is this. Where do you like to make your story? And who do you want to listen to it?
Thanks very much to Mr. Jack Ward, who does, of course, do some excellent work in the world audio drama with his show, The Sonic Society, which is a really prolific show. Puts out a fair amount of episodes. He's got himself and our friend Davey Ault. He does some interviews, and they sit down with people every week. And as well as that, they put out a lot of different audio drama.
Yeah.
And it's a really good show for discovering things that you might have not found before.
Absolutely. Regular content from there, as you say. So one of the bastions of this niche of a niche.
And I think all that's left for this week is the listener's favourite segment, which is, of course, the spam email of the week. And this wasn't actually an email. This was a comment on the website.
Yeah.
But I'll hand this over to you, Robert. I don't think you've seen this before, have you?
Not until this morning. A quick note on Valenhai, by the way. I am planning to resurrect an old character that I had back in the days of role-playing. You'll know my email address as slendar@hotmail.com. Well, Aaron Slendar was a role-playing character, and he had a particular accent because he was from far, far away. That was the actual name of the place. And I'm going to do it in his voice. Let me get comfy. What I do not realize is in reality how you are now not actually much more smartly appreciated than you may be now.
Meaningless rubbish.
What I do not realize.
Well, it's good that we've established what he doesn't realize.
Yeah. You are very intelligent. You recognize, therefore, significantly when it comes to this topic, produced me, personally imagine it from numerous various angles. I just, yeah, speak on, sir. It's like women and men are not interested until it is something to do with Woman Gaga.
Is that a Lady Gaga tribute act?
Lady Gaga's mother or something. Or maybe Lady Gaga's in the nobility and it was like an illegitimate daughter of or
Lady
something.
Gaga fan fiction.
Yeah, the tribute. Yeah. So it's like women and men are not interested until there's something to do with Woman Gaga. Funny how Woman has a capital and Gaga doesn't.
Well, take it up with the author.
Anyway.
If that was the biggest problem we had with this piece, then
yeah,
we wouldn't be reading it.
Your own stuff's outstanding. At all times, handle it up.
Handle it up? I'm going to start saying that, you know. When I meet my friend in the street, handle it up, bro.
Hey, handle it up. Stick it sideways. See if it catches on.
Yeah, it
will. So, yeah, thanks.
No name on that.
You.
There was just some massive, massive email address. Like,
right.
You know, the character limit for email address, it was just like numbers. And
ZX474THQ. Yeah,
there was a lot going on. At AIM.
Right.
Not the product of a human brain, I'd imagine.
Right. Bots where it's at. Yeah. Okay.
Aside from that, though, that's just about it for this week. You know what? I'm going to meet my brand new nephew this afternoon. My brother and his girl have just had a wee baby.
Lovely.
Callum. So, going to meet him. But first, I'm going to buy a strimmer.
You stroked your beard when you said that.
Yeah.
Is it for your beard?
No, it's not.
It's for your...
That'd be painful.
Yeah.
Julia, could you strim my beard, please?
Hold still.
You know what's a bit Alanis Morissette about this whole situation? 5 years ago, we met at college, Robert. I think it was 5 years ago now. I left a full-time career in basically cutting the grass. to study audio. And now I'm about to be presented with my honours degree in sound production, doing some work, as I said, on the side, producing podcasts, and got my first pay packet from that. What am I going to spend it on? A strimmer to cut the grass. So it feels like, in a sense, the last 5 years, I'm pretty much back cutting grass. We can't even record this podcast without grass being cut. So it's like some big message. You went a bit mad last week talking about the Truman Show and this conspiracy. And it's like I'm having these signals like, nah, don't try and move into the whole audio thing. It's not for you. Just go and buy your lawnmower and cut your grass and be done with it. Is that what the world's trying to tell me?
Well, I gave up my career in the bank to go back to college and learn about radio. And what am I doing 5 till 10 on a regular basis? I'm back in the bank doing a slightly different job, and it's slightly more interesting. But I had to buy more officey clothes recently. And the sheer disdain in my heart for the fact that I was buying black sensible trousers and a shirt with a collar and stuff like that, just to top up my wardrobe with a... This is not what I want to be spending money on.
Yeah, the money they gave you, you're now spending it so that you could continue to work there, and you wonder how this cycle ever happened in the first place.
This is probably a good time to mention Patreon.
Yeah, I was
again.
Just going to say patreon.com/yapaudi. No, yeah. don't go to Patreon this week or this month. Get on Neil's Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather see Neil getting funded for this wee project that he's doing. But we'll, in the meantime, continue our bank and grass-based services in the real world.
Are you one of the voice actors for that Kickstarter? Is that why you're just trying to make sure you get paid?
No,
that's
I'm not.
That's what Kickstarter's for.
Maybe he's doing auditions, though.
Yeah, I'm available.
Well, get in there. Just pledge the money that you want. If you pledge £1,000, you'll get paid £1,000. So, mind you, Kickstarter take 10%.
I've heard of people doing that, you know, selling... Do they have Avon in America? And
they'll have an alternative,
yeah,
I'd imagine.
Yeah, like selling makeup and stuff door to door, and this woman's like, yeah, but I get 60% of everything I sell, so I bought the lot. Okay, well, here's a calculator. You tell us how much you've made.
Here's one for you, just before we wrap it up.
Yeah.
When I was young, I was about 13. But when I was young, and 13, yeah. Bought my first six string. Me and my pal Wayne, we used to sell tablet and fudge and things like that.
Oh yeah.
Around the doors. So this guy would come in a van and give us sweets. Sounds a bit suspicious, but we would sell all this stuff. It was like £80 worth of confectionery over a 2 week period and get £6 each for it.
Nice.
Which wasn't very good. But what I used to do when we were around at his house playing the PlayStation, probably would have been FIFA 97 we were playing.
Wow.
And he had his money jar with his 50 pences in it, and he had his box with his fudge and macaroon bars and things like that. When he went to the toilet, I would take a 50 pence that he'd already earned, and when he came back from the toilet, I used to buy one of his own macaroon bars off him. And then when the guy came to pick all the leftover sweets and the money and things like that, his tub was always short of money, obviously, because I'd been buying sweets with the same 50 pence, and his mum used to always give him a row and say, I bet Matthew's tub, I bet that's not short, I bet he does it properly.
Aye.
And I'm nodding, aye, I do.
You bet. That's why I'm round here every week.
If Wayne's listening, I don't think he will be, but sorry about that. Come and see me, I'll give you a fiver.
50 pence.
That'll sort it.
50 pence in modern terms compared to, what, 1987 or something? No, you'd have been...
It was 97.
97.
Roughly.
Yeah, you're younger than me, damn it.
But there you go, a peek into my childhood.
Have we discussed tablet before? Again, for the American audience. And
it's just pretty much hardened sugar.
Yeah, boiled sugar with milk, I think.
You won't get tablet in America, surely.
They're not big on
sugar
there.
They're notoriously healthy out there.
Sorry,
USA.
So, anything on Valenheim? I've got something to say about Valenheim.
Go for it, then. You should have brought this up before we went all silly.
I finished the first draft of the story I was working on. That was a good couple of days ago now. I've sent it to one or two people just to look over. I know I've got a few changes to make to it, but the feeling of having accomplished a story in its own right which is something we've not done very often over the past 5 years because we've always been working on a series. Such a great feeling.
Yeah, more than a feeling.
Oh, hello to Boston, if you're out there. Steve, is it? Steve Schneider
yeah,
in Boston?
Yeah, Steve's in Boston.
I think he's the guitarist.
He is.
So, yeah, Valenhai, it's coming along nicely. Got more ideas. I've got a great idea for I'm not going to go into it, otherwise we're here all day. Let's just promise to keep you informed as with real developments come in. So that's about it, I think.
Yeah, time to go and buy that strimmer.
Yeah, I'm going to go and get my jogging gear on and think about going out for a jog. I'll at least think about it. I might do it.
Counts if you think about it.
Yeah, because it's 50% mental, isn't it, exercise? So I could just do the 50% at home and then promise to do the other 50% tomorrow.
Yeah, you could pick that up later on.
Yeah.
If you want to discuss, get in touch or talk about anything that's been mentioned today.
I know the email address.
Do you?
It's podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
Well done.
Yeah.
So you type that into your old, if audio editing software is called a DAW, what's an email interface called? I wouldn't like to, hazard a guess.
Network Communication Protocol.
Do that. Just get on that and do it. Get it done. And maybe we could talk about you next week on the pod.
Yeah, we can't stress enough, or maybe we can, maybe just enough. If you've got anything you want us to discuss, maybe you even want to discuss it with us on the show, or at least send us in suggestions. Let us know. We'll sort something out, I promise you. We can make it work. We can make it happen. Us audio drama people, we are the future.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.